with Aaron Cowan.
I throw balls far. You want good words? Data language.
Talk real sports with a real man.
Come after me. I'm a man. I'm 40.
And now, here's the be-all, end-all, know-it-all of high school, college, and pro sports. Aaron Skinny Cowan with The Skinny on Sports.
We're talking about practice, man. I'm the MVP.
Good Wednesday morning out there, Western Oklahoma. Welcome to The Skinny on Sports right here on 98.1 FM, The Sports Animal. Hope everybody that can hear us enjoyed a little bit of the rain overnight. Long needed rain. You know, it's pretty amazing. When summer was here, you know, like real summer, it was nice and cool, it felt like, for summer. Rained all the time. 20% chance of rain turned into 100% probability of getting it, which is something I don't know that I'd ever seen before in my life. You just kind of took it for granted. Hey, it's a 20% chance of rain. It's going to rain. And then fall, which was supposed to show up in September, summer held on. And it has been forever since it's rained, felt like. It's been hot, awful. And then the rain came today. So, hope everybody enjoys it. Cloudy out there. It's nice and comfortable. And it feels like a fall morning here in Western Oklahoma. Fall means football. And for a long time around these parts, football meant Oklahoma and Nebraska. We'll talk about kind of OU Nebraska through the years at the end of the show. At least, you know, there's go back a certain period of time that we can remember. But growing up as a kid, I remember in, I don't know, I was probably 6 or 7. And in my stocking was this VHS tape. Kids, if you don't know what VHS is, look it up. The Google will tell you. It was a way of viewing movies back in the day. And it was a VHS of the game of the century. And it was just a copy of that game from 1971. I watched it multiple times. Not near as many as I watched the recorded VHS tape of the 1986 Orange Bowl between the Sooners and Penn State. Resulted in a... I could almost... by the time I was 10 years old, I could almost mimic that entire broadcast. I'd watch it so many times. And then I wondered to myself, who in the world would buy me a video of Nebraska beating OU?
I still find it odd that...
Why do we
celebrate a loss?
Why in the world do I want a video of that? Then you get older and you realize what that was. So we'll talk about OU Nebraska through the years. College football this week, the in-state games. Oklahoma State with a tough one on the road at Boise. What needs to change offensively for the Cowboys? We'll talk about this year's OU Nebraska game. I can't decide, man. On the Western Oklahoma Realty College Pick'em, I went one way, and I'm trying to talk myself out of it. I just can't decide what's going to happen in that game. So maybe your insight or the listener's insight will give me a clearer picture.
You don't want my insight.
I can see it going both ways. I can see this game being two totally different games because of one strength of Nebraska that I'm not sure OU's ready for. High school football this week, man, I got to tell you, in this day and age, you don't see what happened yesterday happen very often.
What's that?
This is the win first, win at all costs, win everything mentality.
Okay.
And the Millwood Falcons said, nope. Not so fast, my friends.
Yeah.
Pretty incredible statement put out by Millwood Public Schools yesterday with regards to their game against Clinton. So that one's off the table. You got Thomas and Cashin, rematch of last year's state title, and then 4A and Class 4A1, Class A action. There's all kinds of games littered about the area that we can talk about here this morning. Just kind of give you an early taste of the high school football coming up on Friday night. This is actually my Thursday.
Are you off Friday?
I am.
Well, thanks for telling me now.
I'm out of here, buddy. I'm headed to Stillwater.
That's right.
I am headed to Stillwater on Friday. Enjoy. You know, I don't know if you can call it enjoying 3 days of Carson Creek when you just get beat up by that golf course, but it's going to be fun.
Oh, any day of golf is better than no day of golf, right?
I don't know if that's true. I understand the sentiment. I just don't know if it's true. But, yeah, so this is my Thursday. 225-9698 is the phone or the text line. 225-9698. Give us a call. Shoot us a text. We can talk about any of those things. Whatever else might be on your mind, feel free to chime in. 225-9698. I was a little bit... Did you hear the audio coming over? So we were probably on the road about the same time.
No.
From Alabama's Jordan Battle.
No.
I
was listening to something else.
I was scared to death to just record it because I wasn't exactly sure what all he said.
I think I've seen some stuff on social media and I didn't click on it.
Asking about Saban's favorite sayings. Oh my gosh. Find it. They were playing it this morning and it was, first off, completely out of character for what you'd think Saban would be like into.
You're right.
Oh dear. Anyway, that was pretty good. So if you can find that, that's funny. I was just afraid of what was on there without,
yeah,
you know, those guys had it cleaned up possibly, and it may not be anything to clean up, but boy, it was funny.
I've seen a lot of tributes to Norm Macdonald.
Yeah,
man, that guy was funny.
Yeah, I was going to get to that right off the top. Once I get through the spiel. 225-9698. I watched a bunch of videos of him. And some of the...
I posted one last night. I was crying laughing.
Was that the one with Courtney Thorne Smith?
Yes.
Oh, man. They're
so good.
There were... I think I watched like four of them.
The moth joke?
The moth joke's one. There was another joke about a wife being a battle axe and she was in a coma. See that? Did you hear that one?
No.
Oh dear. I'm not sure if we can bring that one to air.
There's a good one where he's on Conan again. He was on Conan a lot, mm-hmm. and he brought a gift basket to Conan to give to Conan. So I'm a little late with this. I meant to give this to you when you got the Late Show gig or the Tonight Show gig. And this was after obviously he's about to be done,
mm-hmm.
and that was all out there and. He said, well, here's a card, and said, congratulations on, and so they'll never take this away from you. And Conan's face, it was as red as his hair. It was so funny. He was just trying not to just laugh as hard as he could. That was good. There's a lot of really good tributes to the late Norm Macdonald.
There's been certain people that have been guests on those shows like that.
Yeah.
That just had such a rapport with the host, and I don't know if anybody had a better one than those two. I
mean, oh, they were
growing up in Saturday Night Live like they did together, and you could just every time he would take off in a story / joke. Yeah, you're right. Conan's face would get as red as his hair, just knowing what was coming. And so
the best Weekend Update host.
Oh my gosh,
hands down. I can't think of. There's been good ones, but man, his deadpan delivery on those news stories.
There's two.
And he loved to rip on OJ, and it was fun. So funny.
That was what I saw yesterday was he just had a picture of OJ clearly back in that time. And it just said, it was like an 8-second clip, and it said, congratulations, California. Murder's now legal. And I can remember another one that I didn't find yesterday, but I can remember it plain as day. And it was a picture of Kenny G. And his comment there, Kenny G released a Christmas album this week. Happy birthday, Jesus. Hope you like crap.
Oh my goodness. He has a great episode of Jerry Seinfeld. Comedians in Cars Getting Coffee, I think is what it's called. It's on Netflix. And there's one with him. And his comment about Bill Cosby is so funny. I don't want to say it on air. It's a little cringy, but it catches Seinfeld off guard. And then just the way he reacts with his laughter is so funny.
Yeah, and here's text here to SNL days. When it was Jeopardy time.
Oh, absolutely.
And he was Burt Reynolds. Awesome.
No, not Burt Reynolds.
Yeah, Turd Ferguson.
Turd Ferguson. Yeah. Yeah, what do you want?
Yeah, here we go. We got a bunch of them firing in. Turd Ferguson. Oh,
look at the hat. I found this hat backstage. It's a funny hat. I'll take condom things for $500. You mean condiments?
It's funny, see, because it's a big hat.
Oh, that's good. That is so good.
Yeah.
He'll be missed.
No, no doubt. And, you know, it's one of those things, certain celebrities are pretty open and pretty out, you know, out in front of things.
Yeah.
He certainly wasn't one of those. And I think probably you mentioned Conan, and a lot of those clips that I watched were of those two together on that show.
Yeah.
And, you know, I guess maybe it's pretty obvious how sick he must have been. You know, because you always, when one of those shows is wrapping up, you know, there was the week-long Letterman stuff, and the exact people you thought that would be there were.
Right.
You know, and then you don't see Norm.
Yeah, yeah.
And you're,
when Conan was wrapping up.
Exactly.
His,
yeah. And so I think that without, I mean, it should have maybe foretold something. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Like as far as that he just was, because that's somebody that would obviously be one of the very first names you would think of.
Right.
With a wrap-up of a show like that. But, yeah, you're right. It just, the more you, like, started to think of and look in the tributes yesterday on social media, just the rabbit hole or the wormhole you could go down with funny, I mean, like, cry laugh, snort laugh, funny stuff from that dude. And it was always just so, I mean, like when he would tell us jokes on Conan, he'd just kind of look around and go, what? What's so funny?
They're telling a story of him and Adam Sandler and some other comedians were on Conan. It's a clip, one of the clips I saw. And, you know, he was on Billy Madison, one of his friends, Frank. And he said, Adam Sandler was telling the story of, he never acted with Norm. Obviously, they've been on SNL, but never like on a movie. So he's reading him a line, and he's waiting for Norm to say it back, and he's just waiting to say it back. He's like, man, he's really milking this. Turns out he fell asleep. And he asked Norm, what was that about? It's like, well, the script said I play a drunk. So I said, you got any booze? So apparently he really was drunk half the time filming Billy Madison, and at one point he fell asleep on set. And he said, and I forgot my character's name was Frank, and I didn't respond a few times. He really committed to that character.
Well, you know.
Oh, man, but there's a ton of great stuff. But if you follow me on Facebook, watch it. It's 7 minutes long, that clip, that old clip from him on Conan, but it's unscripted stuff, and that's what made him so – he was so quick. And the jokes he would say and his delivery of it, it was funny. Funny stuff.
Yeah, the Courtney Thorne Smith thing was
– oh, that was good.
It was hilarious. I mean, it's just
– the box office poison.
Yeah. Making fun of a carrot top. And then, you know, she kind of thinks she gets over, or Conan kind of thinks to get over on him when it's like, well, the chairman of the board is the name of the movie.
Yeah, he said, do something with that.
Yeah,
freak.
Do something with that. And he goes, okay, chairman of the board. And, of course, it was kind of hard to tell. Like, part of me thought as soon as the cameras went off, she just punched him in the face. And part of me thought as soon as the cameras went off, she just started making out with him. I couldn't tell.
She was crying laughing.
Yeah. I mean,
she couldn't help but, you know, is.
I mean, it in a super awkward situation because at that point in life, she was a bigger deal than he was.
It turned out he was right because when she left Melrose Place to do a movie with Carrot Top, it was. Yeah.
That's why nobody knows who we're talking about.
No. I was reminded who she was when I saw that clip. I was like, oh, I forgot about that girl.
The 15-year-old skinny and Jared knew exactly who she was.
I didn't watch Melrose Place. I didn't know. I didn't care about that show when I was 15.
No, 90210?
No. I wasn't into that. Hmm. One of the first shows like that was maybe Dawson's Creek. Maybe.
Dawson's
and that
Creek.
Lasted about two seasons. I thought, what am I doing? I'm a guy. Shouldn't be watching this stuff.
Yeah, I hadn't thought about Dawson's Creek in years.
Every teenager our age watched that show at one point or another.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
I don't want to be.
What were they?
Every time that song comes on, you think, oh, Dawson's Creek. Yeah, standing on a rowboat going to Joey's house.
Yeah, Joey. That's what I was trying to think of. Her. You know what? That I wonder.
I don't know how we got to Dawson's Creek.
I wonder.
Let's talk sports.
I want to know. I may have to text it here in the break because I have a niece named Joey. I wonder if that's where that came from.
Is it short for Josephine?
I have no idea.
Because that's what Joey I've on never, Dawson's Creek is.
I've never put those two things together.
Never know.
Maybe so. Aunt Dina, is that why you named your daughter Joey? That's an homage.
Big.
As an homage to Katie Holmes.
Do you have any nephews named Pacey or or Dawson?
No, don't have any Dawsons or Paceys
okay.
in there.
Oh, man. No Jens? Any Jen?
No.
Okay.
Well, here we go. That's a big no, LOL, says Will.
Hard no.
Yeah, we'll see. Anyhow, yeah, Norm MacDonald. Gone too soon. Age of what, 61?
Yes, 61.
Lots of funny stuff. And that, you know, sorry, bosses. That may be what I do today.
It's just watch
look
old
up,
clips
look up
of
old clips.
Norm MacDonald. Yeah.
Because I did it, like it just popped up like three or four, a couple of the ones you were talking about, and I mean I was just about falling out of my chair yesterday afternoon. Some stuff I'd seen, and some stuff I'd never seen.
Yeah, when the Conan one, the one with the Carrot Top ripping on Carrot Top came up, I was sitting in my chair and I paused the TV because I wanted to watch it on my phone, and my girls are in bed, my wife's in bed probably asleep, and I'm trying not to laugh too loud.
Yeah.
So I put my hand on my face. So what comes with that is it sounds like I'm coughing and then I'm crying laughing. I'm just trying not to gut laugh like you said.
Yes.
Too loud.
Listen, you need to find that one where he's talking about the wife being in a coma. Dude.
Yeah.
A little Jenny Garth. Some people watch those shows.
No. That's good. That's good for them.
Back in the day.
Everybody had their show when they were a teenager.
Oh, for sure.
The OC.
I don't even know what that one is.
Okay. That was early college for me.
What was the one? There's still kind of some spinoffs and maybe still happening now. Oh, darn it. I think it was MTV. Not The Real World, which, by the way, changed TV forever. For good then, bad now. It's one of the ladies married Jay Cutler, and then they're since divorced. What was that show? It's out in California. What was it called?
Oh, The Hills.
The Hills. Yeah, the Hills. That was kind of the college time or after college time. The Hills. Got it. Road Rules.
I enjoyed the Road Rules stuff. Those were fun.
Those are still going on, aren't they? Road Rules.
I don't know.
Challenge.
I'm just too old. 38. I don't even watch MTV anymore. You know the VMAs were on the other day.
No.
Yeah, me neither. Although I saw the clip of, they honored Foo Fighters, so and Foo Fighters there performing, so I saw that clip. That's all I saw of the VMAs. That's it. Apparently Conor McGregor wants to fight, who's the guy? Machine Gun Kelly. Apparently they almost got in a fight on the red carpet.
Really?
Yeah. Because Conor McGregor would fight anybody.
Now this is true right here.
What's that?
We're old enough to remember MTV being music television.
Absolutely. That's, it was what I would turn on in the mornings getting ready for school.
Yo, MTV Raps.
There'd be music on and music videos. So I'd have that on in the background getting ready for school.
A totally different Dr. Dre.
Now there's nothing.
I think you have to watch like MTV 2 to watch videos.
I don't even know if that's a
That's not even a thing anymore.
True. No.
Anyhow. All right, high school football.
This is a good move by Millwood.
Okay, so I had
is that where
pull,
you want to go?
Yeah, I had to pull it
did
up
you
on
the
my
statement
phone.
Up?
I did. I had it pulled up. All right, here we go. So Millwood won the Soul Bowl last week over Douglas. What was it, 27-7, I believe, was the final score there?
Something like that.
To move to 1-1. Supposed to come out to Clinton this week. And you got tipped off about this yesterday during the show.
Yeah.
That Millwood was going to cancel this game, and we're thinking, I mean, when you said cancel the game, my first thought was, oh, they've got COVID.
Exactly. That's what I thought.
Dadgum. And then as you continued to tell us about it, it was because of their poor performance in the academic standing. Just terrible, apparently, because here's the statement. This comes from Millwood Public Schools. It is with extreme remorse and regret that Friday's football game between the Millwood Falcons and the Clinton Red Tornadoes has been canceled. Due to our poor academic standing, Millwood football has always stood behind the importance of developing the total student, and student is all caps,
right,
athlete, and living out our motto of building champions in the classroom, in the community, and in life. We have never, also all in caps, been faced with these circumstances, but this percentage of ineligible players is not acceptable. As a program, we will not bubble wrap our student athletes and shield them from understanding that there are consequences to the decisions that they make and must hold them accountable. We understand the demands of transitioning back to the classroom 100% from the virtual classroom is difficult, but we must rise to the occasion. The decision to cancel this contest, while extremely difficult to do, is required to make sure that we are able to achieve short-term and long-term goals that we say are important. Academics is always our first priority. Now, here's the thing about that. You can say that all you want to, but this is putting that motto into action. We mean it so much that you're not going to get to go out and play one of the, what, top five easily most storied high school football programs in the state of Oklahoma.
In a historic venue.
In a historic venue, yeah, on the road at the Tornado Bowl.
Right. And an opportunity for a two-way to beat a 4A, a top, I guess, three now 4A team. Yeah, it's a good statement to make, and I hope other schools follow suit. You know, I like the quote about bubble wrapping a kid. They're not going to do that. You know, we're going to make it clear that it's student first, and, you know, it's student-athlete, not athlete-student. So making it, I like the statement they're putting out, and again, I hope other schools follow suit.
Well,
and we're having this discussion last night at the dinner table, and I mean, this is stuff I push on my 7-year-old. I tell her, I was like, listen, you're doing great on the softball field, but the classroom comes first. Get those spelling tests done. Get those math quizzes done. Read those books they're telling you to read. And we were having that discussion at the table last night about this very topic, and how it's sometimes it's a little sad in some school systems and in some households where it's not the case. It's athlete first and not student. And I immediately pointed at Katie. I go, Katie, what's more important, school or softball? She immediately said, school. And she knows that's – so that's something I hope that other parents are – and I'm not saying there's not. I know a lot of parents are great, and they're doing that with their kids. But I'm glad to see Millwood take a stand here and make this statement. Now, on the other side of it, I'm just saying it just to say it. Would this have come up if it was a district game? Because they would have to take a forfeit, am I right?
It looks to me like yes. Because, I mean –
okay, I'm just saying it. I'm just asking the question. I'm not saying that they wouldn't. I'm just for sake of discussion.
I guess we'll find out next week if they don't turn it around. I mean, but,
true,
you know, just to do this, it's one thing because every single coach, athletic department, school system in Oklahoma will preach the same thing Millwood's preaching. And the statement's great.
Right.
But the statement isn't what they wrote down on a piece of paper. The statement that they're making is not playing the game. The actions speak way louder than the words, because we know good and well that while everyone has the good intentions, the winning trumps that a majority of the time.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
And they're not letting that happen. And so kudos to Millwood for the statement of showing that there's actually consequences in this world for not doing what you're supposed to do. And I love, like you did, the bubble wrap, because I feel like even me in my own personal life, we try to insulate our kids from bad things way too often. And the truth of it is you learn from mistakes just as much, if not more, than you learn from successes. And I think we try so hard to eliminate those mistakes that we're doing our kids an injustice and not ever allowing them to fail, or trying not to, and learning what it takes to come back from failure. And so this is just an awesome, I think, statement from Millwood by not playing this game, by not allowing. You know, it stinks for Clinton. You know, it's a good opponent. Would have been a fun atmosphere and all that. You know, that it just – but –
supposed to be homecoming.
Supposed to be – but at the end of the day, you know, I think even the folks over there have to have – you know, give a little tip of the cap.
Oh, yeah.
To what's happening.
I haven't heard or seen any bad statements from Clinton fans of not playing a game. It's more of, hey, kudos. Because you know, that's it's a good statement to make for Millwood and Clinton. They've already adjusted. Said, okay, we'll just have homecoming the next home game, which I think is in a couple weeks. So no big deal. It's not like they're missing out on homecoming. So they'll just push it back a couple of weeks. So it, yeah, I think it's getting well received. Millwood's actions here are being well received throughout the state.
And you wonder how many people in positions to make the decisions like that.
Yeah.
kind of look inside their own house and go, would I do that?
Right.
Would we have the intestinal fortitude to do that?
Well, don't you think that a bunch of other, including Clinton, Elk, Weatherford, everywhere, are going, they're in the locker room going, look, guys, you don't get it done in the classroom. We'll do this, too.
I think it's a great motivator for coaches and to use
especially
before
schools,
it happens.
Yeah, especially yes. Schools that are considered contenders. You got upstart schools like right here in Elk City that are saying, hey, we're good enough to make the playoffs this year. You guys don't get it done in the classroom, then all this work is for nothing.
Yeah, I think Millwood setting that example is going to help other teams not get to that point to have to make that choice.
Yeah.
For sure.
Yeah.
Over in Thomas, man, the Terriers have started out not what they thought. 0-2, cashing, I believe it's 1-1. They lost their first game and then won last week. This is a rematch from last year's Class A state title game in which Cashin defeated the Terriers. You know, this is one of those games where if you're Thomas – It's not going to matter in the district standings because you're in two totally different districts. But this is one of those games that you can kind of look back on at the end of a successful season and go, hey, you know where the turnaround was? It was when we either beat Cashin or really played Cashin off their feet and kind of gained some momentum and gained some confidence heading into the district season.
Yeah, and that's what Thomas is going to have to learn is that this was a – I think going in, they lost a lot – of great players, and it's kind of one of those turnaround years. So these first three games, you know, we've said it over and over again, you learn a lot in wins and losses, and they don't really necessarily hurt you in your district standings. So how they come out against a really good Cashin team, I think can tell you what the rest of the season is going to happen for Thomas, even in a loss. You know, like you said, if they keep it close, and like, you know what, Thomas is still Thomas.
Yeah.
It's still the Terriers, so still got to be ready for them.
Yeah, tough ask though.
It is. That's going to be
back-to-back state title games. They fell to Ringling 2 years ago, beat Thomas last year for the state title under head coach Lynn Shackelford. They lost to Rejoice Christian the first week, came back and beat Perry and Minko the last two. Class 4A District 1, three teams are off. Elk City, Cash, and Bethany have all played their full allotment of the non-district games. Obviously, Clinton now also, they couldn't find anybody at the last minute to come play.
Would have been tough.
Yeah, I mean, when that happens on Tuesday, it's hard to get that done.
Yeah, and not a lot of openings with – we haven't heard a lot of knock on wood. Now, obviously, we heard El Reno. That allowed, I think, like the Clinton-Kingfisher game to materialize last year because both had cancellations. So, okay, let's play each other. That's not happening this year.
Well, and I think last year there was such more – of a willingness to move those games around because I think Clinton ended up playing their district game against Elgin the week that Elk City couldn't.
Right, right.
I don't know if that's quite the case right now, just because it's of the way it's going. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So they're not going to be able to make it either. You got Chickasha and Anadarko. Elgin faces Tecumseh, Newcastle and Blanchard, and then Weatherford hosts Woodward. After everybody being on the road last week, only one road game this week with Chickasha at Darko. The one to be that I'm interested in more than any, well, I guess the two would be Newcastle and Blanchard. Blanchard put it on Elgin. Newcastle got whipped by Tuttle. Now, you know, where does Newcastle fit in with a Elgin with a similar opponent? You know, the game never goes the same, but where are they at with Blanchard? And then also, after Woodward upset Bethany last week, you know, did they just have an off day against Clinton or did they just have a great day against Bethany? When they traveled to play Weatherford.
Or did Bethany have an off day at Woodward?
Yeah, where is...
I still feel like there's a story there.
Yeah, that
I
was just a weird...
Was Woodward or was Bethany not at full strength or was Woodward not at full strength?
Against Clinton. Right.
I think there's a story there. I'm sorry I haven't reached out to find out. I don't know, have a lot of contacts at either community.
Yeah.
So...
Be interesting to see how that game plays out.
Yeah, and then, you know, Weatherford, they did not play last week. Did they've only had one game. Do they lose rhythm, or are they fresh and healthy and really chopping at the bit to get it going.
I think that's a really interesting game to see what the result there is. Merritt will head to Hinton. Hinton with the weird four non-district game schedule because they don't have the full allotment of teams in that district, I suppose. That's why they get to play four, or they choose to. So Merritt is at Hinton. Hinton 3-0 so far in the season, coming off a one-point win against Mangum, which Merritt dropped their opener by one to Mangum. Burns Flat, Dill City, and Mangum. Speaking of the Tigers, they're over at Burns Flat this week. And then a good one up north with Moreland and Woodland. A couple of teams ranked in the top 10 in Class A. So that's kind of an early flavor of what's going to go on this week on the high school football gridiron.
Looks like a good week to wrap up non-district play for some.
Right? Yeah, it's over now.
Yeah.
This last week. Next week it's for real. District games.
And I guess I'll be at home twiddling my thumbs. I thought I was going to go over to Clinton.
You can go to Weatherford.
I don't think they'll let me in.
Are the visitor stands built yet? You need to stay over there. Steel time. Hey, I actually led somebody through the process this morning of signing up for the Western Oklahoma Realty College Pick'em. 64 people strong in the game. That's awesome. Great job by everybody out there. Great job. And thank you to Tyler Harris and Robbie Allen at Western Oklahoma Realty. People before property is their motto for all your real estate needs. They got it done down there at Western Oklahoma Realty. Now 64 in the contest. Only 9 still with a winning record. Only 9.
It's hard to pick against the spread.
It's a lot different. And that's why signing up for some of the folks that signed up, you know, today or this week, you're still not out of it.
Exactly.
Because against the, it is. It's just harder to pick games against the spread. Listen, if it was just picking winners, Las Vegas would still be a desert.
Yeah.
You throw that point spread in there and all of a sudden there's giant casinos.
You know what we never talked about was the atmosphere at Las Vegas on Monday night.
Derek
did
Hart.
Did you see the opening?
No.
It was cool. They had one of the Buffer boys right before kickoff. It was like
surely it was Michael instead of Bruce.
I think it was Bruce.
Which one is which?
I think
Bruce does MMA.
Yeah.
Michael does the big fights.
Right. Well, either one. It was one of them. I can't remember. But he was pumping up the crowd.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like it was a fight. They had of course a DJ there. I mean, they really, because that was the first time they were able to fill that stadium with fans since it was built. And they really brought that Las Vegas feel inside the stadium.
Derek Carr talked about being at home and the crowd noise bothering him because there was such a buzz.
They were.
But here's the deal about Vegas. I don't know how much of a home field advantage that's actually going to be.
Because you got a lot of commuters and tourists. And
people that live there all came from everywhere.
Right.
Or, you know, that's not one of those towns where it's just a ton of homegrown folks.
But.
The Golden Knights, they've taken a liking to them.
Yeah, see. So, I mean.
But hockey's different than football.
Yeah. This is a team. It wasn't an expansion team. It was a.
That's true.
It was a relocated team.
And the Raiders and L.A. to Vegas, that's a short trip, and there could be a whole bunch of people.
There's going to be fans, like you said, who have located to Vegas from other parts of the country who have never liked the Raiders.
That's right.
You see.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying.
So yeah. If it was an expansion team, like, hey, you know what? I'm going to root for this team because they came here after.
Here we go. Michael did Sunday night football. Bruce did Monday night football.
Oh, okay.
So Michael was in L.A. Bruce was in Vegas.
Oh, okay. Very good. Thanks for the clarification, Texter. So anyways, it was a cool atmosphere. Where are we going next?
Oh, I was looking at, trying to figure, oh, that the 30 for 30 with Al Davis versus the NFL. That's what that is. Did you watch that one?
I did not watch that.
It was a strange one because it was like they had a computer animated
AI thing. Yeah.
Yeah, Al Davis.
Right. Like he was.
Like he was alive, but he wasn't.
Yeah.
We all know he's dead.
It was a little weird.
But it was a great story, and he was just brawling with the league all the time, trying to move here and there and everywhere.
Yeah.
All right. This week, Oklahoma State up in Boise on the Smurf Turf against the Boise State Broncos. Oklahoma State's offense so far, you can only say struggle. compared to what we're used to in the game against Missouri State, and then also last Saturday against Tulsa. Outside of just, okay, play better, what can Oklahoma State do from a schematic standpoint or maybe even a personnel standpoint to kind of get the thing going? Because I think on Saturday night, they're going to have to score some points to keep up with Boise.
Well, yeah, play better is clearly the answer, but how do they play better? I mean, Sanders has got to play better. He has got to protect the ball better. Stuff like that. And they just got to run the ball better. And I'm not too sure they can do that. That offensive line is so questionable for me.
So then how do you do it?
I don't know. If you can't run the ball, I mean, figure some stuff out. Passes in the flat, long handoffs per se, stuff like that. Spread it out. Keep the defense more on their heels than on their toes. And that will probably open up the run game a little bit for you. Instead of having, okay, we can't run the ball, so let's just chuck it downfield every time. That's not going to work. You know, maybe get a little creative. And we've seen that out of Gundy and company. So I think that's what's going to take is get a little creative early. You know, throw that first punch early at Boise State. That's what you want to do. Take the crowd out. And then have Boise State constantly adjusting to what you do as opposed to constantly adjusting because you can't do something. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
It just seems such like the first two games, the offense has been so uninspired. And that's so unlike a Gundy coach team to me.
I mean, I think if you're glass half full, and it'd need to be really full with the way that they haven't been able to move anybody off the line of scrimmage. But if you're totally glass half full, you could talk yourself into, okay, they just haven't shown anything because they thought they could win without doing it. And now, you know, they didn't want to tip Boise.
Right.
Which, who knows, maybe so. But to your point about the long handoffs, did you watch Carolina and the Jets in the NFL on Sunday?
I did not, no.
McCaffrey caught 9 balls, and it seemed like 7 of those were just flip it to him. I mean, just a long handoff.
Yeah.
Is what, just to kind of get outside the tackle box and let him get into space and run. And everybody's clamoring to see Brennan Presley. Brennan Presley isn't Tylan Wallace.
Right.
He is Dylan Stoner, Josh Stewart, that type of guy. And to me, when watching that, I'm thinking, this is exactly what they ought to do. Everybody wants to see Presley have the ball in his hands more. It's hard to run between the tackles right now because the offensive line isn't executing. Why not run this play about 8 times to just get some space out there? And it works as a function of the run game. I mean, it's not like a throw. I mean, I get it, you're throwing it, but it's not like a throw. You're just pitching it out there further than a sweep. You know, it's like a couple extra yards out to the flat. And so different things like that.
Just create the one-on-one stuff.
And does it not seem like when you watched against Tulsa especially, the closer OSU got to the red zone or to the end zone, the more predictable. Like, you knew exactly what was going to happen. Well, guess what? So does the defense. I mean, there is no, like, you know, you always say, like, manipulate. You hear the guys on TV. Let's manipulating the eyes of the linebackers or the safeties or what. It doesn't feel like anything so far this year has been designed to do that.
Right.
You know what I mean? It's just all like straightforward vanilla, and maybe they're pulling a rope-a-dope, and it's going to be a different thing come Saturday night up in Boise offensively with the play calling. And you'd hope that would be the case. Because right now, with what we've seen offensively out of OSU, it's hard to imagine them keeping up. And that is such a weird thing to say. But it's hard to imagine them keeping up offensively with Boise and the weapons that Bachmeier and also Stephon Cobbs and Khalil Shakur are at Boise. And for me, this is clearly OSU's defensively the toughest test that they've had so far this season.
Do you like how the defense has played so far?
I think it's been a little bit, maybe a little underwhelming, but I also think that has to do with the way the style that they've chosen to play. You know what I mean? They've just been out there so much more than they should have been because the offense can't take any of the load off. You know what I mean? And sometimes you just say, hey, and you know, it's worked because OSU's 2-0. But sometimes you just decide our strength is defense. Don't screw it up offense. And with what we've seen, especially from Spencer Sanders in the past, that's a pretty decent way to look at it. Because if there's a guy that's proven that he might be able to screw it up, it's definitely that guy.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, he threw it right in the belly of a Tulsa defender for a touchdown. But it just feels like there hasn't been much imagination. Here you go, from one of the biggest OSU fans I know, use the center of the field to keep the linebackers and safeties out of the box. It all makes sense. But you've just got to, if you're not going to be able to just run it down somebody's throat, which they haven't been able to yet, you've got to use some kind of deception or at least getting somebody off their spot with different play action or different motion or whatever that is, eye candy, before the snap to be able to create some running room or even create some sort of small angle. That way the blocking can work a little bit better in the run game.
Yeah, yeah.
For Oklahoma, man, I honestly cannot decide what's going to happen in this game. I think the conventional wisdom around here is, oh, you're just going to kill Nebraska. Everyone remembers watching Nebraska play Illinois with Illinois' second-string quarterback, and they beat them 30-22, and Illinois was ahead the whole game. And then, since Illinois has lost two games, to go down to 1-2. We all see that. And then, of course, you know, Oklahoma played much better against a horrible opponent, albeit in Western Carolina. So that's what you kind of remember. But I'm not so sure.
So they could be a little tighter than what some are saying.
I'm not so sure. Here's my thing. There is no doubt what the strength of Nebraska's team is right now. And it's their front seven on defense. You've got Damian Daniels, you've got Stilley, JoJo Doman, one of the linebackers. Their front seven, and especially the defensive line, is good.
Mm-hmm.
Oklahoma, offensive line-wise, a little bit like OSU. Just have not been as dominant and as nasty and as physical as what you wanted to see. Throw out last week against Tulane, they couldn't run the football when they wanted to. And that's... When we talk about, hey, you got to run the football, what I'm talking about is when the other team knows you're going to run it and you still go, watch this.
Right.
I'm running it.
Right.
Oklahoma has not shown the ability to do that whatsoever just yet. And really dating back to last year, they couldn't do it with these same guys up there on the offensive line. So with Nebraska's defensive line, if they can make Oklahoma more one-dimensional like Tulane did and having to throw the football all over the place, then you start getting Spencer Rattler off his spot. And by the way, we've seen he's capable of turning it over at a pretty high rate as well.
Sure, sure. Yeah, it's not as clear cut as some would say, based on the lack of success what Nebraska's had, and obviously what OU's done. So OU's going to have to come out. It's still a Power Five opponent from the Big Ten. Last time that happened in Norman, it was not pretty. I know Ohio State is nowhere compared to Nebraska, but it's still an opponent you got to be ready for. And it sometimes, though, in situations like this, when all the focus, it feels like in this game, all the focus is how bad is Nebraska. And sometimes in situations like this, in games like this, a team like that comes out inspired. And everyone's kind of waiting for that turning point, that game for Scott Frost. And what more of an opportunity would it be for Scott Frost in Nebraska to make this game that game, where people go back and go, that was the game when it finally clicked for Scott Frost and the Nebraska Cornhuskers. So, oh, you better be ready.
Yeah.
And offensively, I think it was Alex Grinch yesterday said, hey, these guys are moving the football.
Like, yeah. I mean,
I know the opponents.
Adrian Martinez, come on. I don't have any faith in him. But you got to not let him run. Here, I'll go. I'll tell you what this game reminds me of just a little bit from with coming in. I think just one year ago, Kansas State, coming off a 35-31 loss to Arkansas State, came into Norman, and everybody knew they were going to get, OU's got revenge because they lost up there last year. Kansas State's terrible, lost to Arkansas State, and what happened?
Right, and Kansas State came in with a ton of players out because of COVID.
That's right.
There's even question of, would they even have enough players?
They were playing
to play
a receiver at safety or something like that.
Right.
And won.
Right.
We'll talk more about that tomorrow as far as this game. Now, after the break, I'm going to go back and relive a little bit of these games.
Okay.
Nebraska, Oklahoma through the years.
Cool.
It is the 50-year commemoration. Easy for you to say, Jared. Commemoration. Of that game of the century on Owen Field back in 1971, Nebraska. 35-31 win over the Sooners. I think even on his deathbed, my dad was still claiming a clip on the Johnny Rogers punt return. That one, just for me growing up, there were two, I would call it devastating moments for OU football that I got told about all the time. That one was a far second place to the 1978 game, which happened to be the weekend of my parents' wedding, maybe even the day of, when Billy Sims fumbled on the three with like 3 minutes to go, and it was Tom Osborne's first win over the Sooners back in 1978. But these, man, there have been classics. It was, you know, when we were kids, little kids, and up until, you know, started to be teenagers, this was appointment television all across the country. And then that dated back way further than us. I mean, way back into the 60s, that was for sure the case, where Thanksgiving meant Oklahoma and Nebraska were about to play for the Big 8 title. And for a large part of the 70s and 80s, Oklahoma was almost like Lucy, and Nebraska was like Charlie Brown. And he would believe and believe and believe with all his might that he was going to be able to kick that football. And Lucy would pull it away from him every single time. And that has to be what Nebraska fans felt like back in those days when Switzer would pull rabbits out of his hat year after year against Tom Osborne and the Huskers.
Yeah. Yeah. And it felt good when that happened. It kind of in the same sense in 2000 when Nebraska got a 14-0 lead. You know, OU scores 31 unanswered.
Yeah, I've been to two. And the first one was that one. And there was still an uneasiness around that team, that Oklahoma team, as far as are we really talking about a national title contender here? Is Oklahoma really back to that level? Because for somebody like you and I, age-wise, you remember, or I do anyway, those teams in the 80s that would lose to Miami and only Miami over a three-year stretch, but did win the national title in 85. And then after that, it was pretty lean, to say the least. You know, Gibbs had some decent teams, but couldn't beat Nebraska, couldn't beat Texas, couldn't beat Colorado even back then.
Right.
And so there was a little bit of, not quite there when it was 14-0. And it happened fast. And then all of a sudden, that game flipped, and Oklahoma outscored them 31-0 through the middle of the first quarter on, and the rout was on, and it was party time in Norman. And then the next year, both teams ran the exact same trick play.
Yeah,
one of the quarterbacks fell down. Instead of being a touchdown, it was a field goal, and the other, Eric Crouch, on his way to winning the Heisman Trophy, made the catch and went all the way for the long touchdown. In a game that was dominated by defense outside of that really one play.
Yeah.
But those 80s games, I mean, for me as a kid, you know, Keith Jackson, 88 yards on a tight end reverse. Who in the world runs tight end reverse? But who in the world has Keith Jackson?
Exactly. If you have Keith Jackson, you do.
You know, and then
you get the ball in his hands no matter what.
As heartbreaking as that was, I mean, OU was leading 27-0 in that game until a late fumble that Nebraska scooped and scored to keep that from being a shutout. The next year was the one that had to just rip the Nebraska fans' heart out. 17-7 going into the fourth quarter. Jackson ties the game with a touchdown catch with a little over a minute left. Sooners get a three and out. Then they throw the pass down the sideline that Jackson one-hand tips to himself and barrels down to about the 13-yard line or so. Lasher kicks the field goal, and OU somehow wins that one. And then the back-to-back years in Lincoln the next year is the Patrick Collins run I was telling you about yesterday. One of the most vivid memories that I have of Oklahoma football is after a 65-yard option play, Collins scores the touchdown and takes the bow in the end zone. And all of it was against Nebraska. And that's, you know, the Texas thing, it was always a rivalry, don't get me wrong, but it wasn't the conference game. It didn't make the difference in going to the Orange Bowl or not. And so as a kid, even up until Nebraska left the conference, and it lost some luster, obviously, when the Big 12 was formed and he didn't play every year.
Right.
But up until when the Big 8 was done, Nebraska was still the game, even more so than Texas.
Yeah, I totally agree. And because it felt like it – well, obviously back in the day because Texas and OU were not in the same conference. They still played every year. But this was when they're in the Big 8, OU and Nebraska. And like what it turned into with OU Texas when the Big 12 was formed, that turned into for a long time whoever won that game had the inside track to the Big 12 championship game and possible national title appearance. That was OU Nebraska before OU Texas.
And it always seemed, even in 2000, and then 2008 even worse, just because Oklahoma just killed them. I was there that night.
Oh, man.
Same night as Tech and Texas, that classic game with Crabtree.
Yes.
But, it was 28-0 before you could blink.
Exactly. I actually turned on the game late and I saw the score. Wow.
Oh, you ran right down the field the first play for Nebraska, threw it right to Dom Franks. He walks in the end zone and the route was on. And it was such a surreal moment as a kid growing up when I did, being in Memorial Stadium, watching Nebraska and Oklahoma go at it. And more people were concerned with the TVs in the suites so they could watch Tech and Texas
right.
than what was going on the field with Nebraska and Oklahoma.
Yeah.
It was such a surreal feeling. You know what? It was like I went to Memorial Stadium and an Elk City Clinton game broke out.
Oh, dear. Not in a good way for Elk City.
Not in a good way for Elk City. That's right. It was just so strange. But
it's funny you bring that up because how we looked at it in high school, me growing up in Clinton, we looked as like Weatherford as the Texas. We looked at Elk City as OSU. We looked at Ada, like Nebraska.
As like Nebraska.
Didn't play them all the time, but we had a lot of respect for them. And when they played, it was a good game.
Meant something. Yeah, and it meant the very most.
Yeah. Yeah. But no, this Saturday is going to bring up – they're going to do it right, I think, celebrating the 50-year.
Not just the
50-year anniversary, but just the what this rivalry was.
And it's still going to be cool to see that interlocking OU and that – red in on the helmets.
Yes.
Have a great day.
You've been listening to the Skinny on Sports podcast with Aaron Cowan. Be sure to hit that subscribe button to get alerts of when the latest podcast is available. Thanks for listening.